are you doing, Amy?
Hi. Hey, Josh. Thanks so much for having me on your podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Welcome to episode number 19, 18 or 19. I've lost track at this point of the Rue Mental Podcast. It's a pleasure to have Miss Amy Crosley on as my guest. It's Crosley or Crosley?
Crosley.
Crosley. That's what I thought. Okay, so it's really good to have you on. This is my first female guest, and she's awesome. We met at UNLV, and she is a drummer and percussionist that is based in Las Vegas. She's part of the UNLV jazz program. How much longer do you have at UNLV, by the way?
I could graduate this semester, but I'm trying to move into my master's into music education. So
okay,
they're kind of blending together. I'm going to start taking my master's classes next semester, even though I'm in my undergrad. Mm. So we're just kind of blending it together.
So you're going to stay at UNLV for your master's?
Yeah, in music education.
Sweet. Nice. Mm-hmm. So my undergrad was in music education, and it was a really good experience for me just because learning how to teach taught me how to teach myself.
Right.
So that was really important for me to figure that out because I came from a Texas program that was very hands-on and always had somebody teaching us, and we never really taught ourselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, when I first started at UNLV as a freshman, I didn't quite know what to do because when you come from high school, you don't want to automatically become a music teacher.
Right,
so I took a lot of different avenues. Like, I started to work at the radio station at UNLV, and I had my own radio show for 3 years. I became a musical director. But
oh wow.
Yeah, I'm no longer there. I had my own jazz radio station.
What's the name of the station again?
It was KUNV 91.5 Jazz and More.
Okay. And you even have the broadcast style mic you're using right now. What mic is that? I've seen that mic before, like with radio hosts and stuff like that, like on YouTube or whatever.
RE20?
Yeah, exactly. I might get that mic myself, actually. But recording nerd over here. But so you had your own jazz. What year did you get that? Your first year?
Yeah, I started working there my freshman year because I was conflicted between to become a teacher or go into broadcast. And now I just kind of do both. We're actually very similar. I mean, you're a drummer. You're doing a podcast. You have your undergrad in music education. That's really cool.
Yeah. I liked the idea of having a podcast pretty early just because it seemed fun. And I felt like I knew a lot of interesting people, especially like when I was getting more and more into further into like the drums and percussion world. Like, the community is pretty niche.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a lot of interesting people that need their stories more heard.
Right.
And so when I started in 2017, I was very, very, I didn't know what I was doing. I had to hire a friend of mine, Wesley in Lake Charles, to help me with all the audio stuff because I just had no idea. I was just a drum nerd studying music at university, and I wanted to get this thing going because you could probably understand this, but the media side of what we do is mostly in the mainstream area of like pop music, rap music,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
I only know a few podcasts that are dedicated to drumming, a few that are dedicated to percussion alone, like very few.
Mm-hmm.
And so the initial vision I had of this was to make it more of a general podcast, but for creative people. It's more gone to the creative people side of things, mostly because I've had on, like, we talked about this before we started recording, but you know, I've had like video editors. My friend Robert's a video editor. I've had actors. I've had bands. I've had all these different kinds of people, guitarists and everything like that. So it went from the Rudimental podcast, the idea of it being a drumming podcast, to just overall just like a creative person's podcast, if that makes sense. So. Yeah,
that's beautiful. That's exactly why I started working at the radio station, because, you know, we play for an audience and we teach music, but the other side of our career is to let people know what we do. And like, you have to tell people when concerts were happening. I mean, that's why I started working at a radio station, because I wanted to tell people, come check out this Steel Pan band, come to a jazz concert. You need to be here. We're winning awards. We're working hard. The art is amazing. Like, we're pouring our heart into this, and you all should be a part of it. And I think everyone should dabble in broadcast. It's essential to what we do.
I think it's social media helps a lot, but there's only so much it can do as far as like what social media is kind of turned into, where it's part of pop culture,
right?
And so like you're still gonna have niche communities within social media, and I find that, I mean, my Facebook is filled with classical percussionists and jazz drummers and drum set players and rock bands.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
So it's just, it's still, you know, the niche community of that. So having an outlet, whether it be a radio show or a podcast or both, I think it was, I just felt this need to have something like that for the community. And it's working out so far. I mean, like, I took a little hiatus when I started my master's because, mm-hmm. I mean, school just kind of overtook my life, but I'm back on it now. And, I think that one thing that I've learned from it is that everybody, no matter what they do, has a really, like, everybody's story is so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question for you is, you're the only, what I've seen, you're the only female drummer / musician in the jazz program that seems to be gigging the most on the strip.
Right.
Are you the only female on the strip playing drums right now?
Well, if I think through some of the shows on the strip that where you have to read a book and you have in your main instrument is drum set, I think I'm the only one. There are female drummers that play in like maybe in cover bands. I think there's only one that plays in a cover band. And then there's some classical percussionists that are very strong, like Rachel Julian, and
yeah,
she plays in the Las Vegas Phil, but she doesn't gig as a drummer. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one.
And so what kind of, this is always fascinating me, what kind of mindset do you have when it comes to that? Because a lot of people unfortunately put gender or the initial look of a person first when it comes to our business.
Mm-hmm.
They put it first a lot of the time. So your mindset, I'm sure, has to be different of that of someone like me, who is like traditionally drumming, the drummer, while we do have great drum set players like Sheila E.
Right.
And who are prominent in our business. Traditionally, there's a lot of males in drumming. So what kind of mindset do you have to have as far as like getting gigs, playing gigs, that kind of stuff?
Ooh, you know, I feel like I haven't faced a lot of sexism, and that's awesome, because that's not the case for everyone else. I think Las Vegas has been very accepting, and they don't even see me as a woman musician. I mean, I've gotten it before. I've gotten, oh, you play, like, don't play like a girl when you get up there.
Yes, the classic.
They might put me in a glitter bra because, you know, they need some sex appeal, something along those lines. But I've had some competition with other guy drummers that I've dealt with that all over the place, all over Vegas and just my whole life. And that kind of stinks. I've heard some comments through some male drummers in that sense. But, like, I don't want to get into that. But it does happen. So, in a way, when I'm faced with that situation, I kind of just, it gives me more fire to go up there and just kill it even more. Like, right. I'm just a person playing the drums. I'm not just a female.
Right.
And just in general, in the whole jazz department, I think, like in big band, we only have two other girls in the big band. So I guess I'm used to it. And the other girl, we've talked about it, like the other girls are very used to only being the only girl on stage. I mean, most of the time I am the only female in the band.
Right.
But,
well, I mean, it's so interesting because, like, even in the marching arts, I mean, did you participate in marching stuff at all?
No, I went to a performing arts high school, Las Vegas Academy. Oh, yeah. We didn't have a marching band, but now I'm teaching marching band.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird. But I am aware of, like, I keep up with DCI and things like that.
Oh, cool. At LVA, did you do, like, general percussion or were you just jazz?
So I did band and jazz, and I really owe that school a lot because I got a really good foundation for classical percussion playing with an orchestra. We had a percussion ensemble. I played in jazz combos, big band. I mean, I would take classes online over the summer so that I could take music classes. I think when I was in school, I only had like two gen eds So I go to school, have two gen eds, and I would be in percussion ensemble and orchestra.
The benefits of an academy.
Yeah. I was definitely spoiled. But,
oh, man.
Yeah, I know. But I didn't have marching band. And Las Vegas is kind of big in marching band right now. So I definitely missed out on that.
Yeah, the school that I teach at is very like, it's very successful in that aspect, and probably the most successful program that I've been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's including all the programs that I've played in as well as opposed to taught in that program. But as far as like, as the marching thing goes, like when you teach it, do you find yourself, because like your approach would be different than mine, right?
Yeah.
So your approach is probably more, you probably have a very musical drumline. Like what I mean by that is like you're pulling the phrasing out of the rhythms because it's all rhythms basically besides the front ensemble. But I bet you can work a drumline like a drum set would. Like sometimes how I would teach a drumline is I would compare it to a drum set a lot because I also play drum set.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that now you're teaching it. Do you like teaching it?
I love it. At first, I was scared to death because I thought I wasn't going to be good enough because I had no knowledge in it. But what I did was I researched a lot before I went in, and I taught front ensemble first. So
okay.
I figured that was a good start for me because, you know, I could teach mallets, teaching like quads and marching snare drum might have been a little more difficult. I can teach it now because I've had to run some sectionals and things like that.
It's really its own animal, like as far as teaching goes.
It's very strange because I came from this place of, you know, everything's beautiful when you do stuff and like when you roll off of a cymbal.
Yeah, the artistic approach.
And I wasn't used to, you know, now we play and we all have the same heights and, yeah. We played with a metronome at LVA, but it wasn't like every rehearsal. And you know what? Marching people that came from a marching background have incredible time. Whereas maybe at LVA, we didn't have the best time, but it's like pounded into marching people. Like you're going to march and play in time, and that, you know, that's just what you're going to do.
One thing about that is, though, like, while the time is established, it's very square time. Right. So it's like on the dot. Like, if I'm playing an accent on the E,
mm-hmm.
I'm playing the accent on the E.
Yeah.
But sometimes time needs to move and breathe and stretch.
Yeah.
And that is one thing that I had to teach myself. Going back to the whole teaching myself thing, I was so rigid with time that it was very, it was extremely, like, basically it was just extreme. That's it. And yeah. So when I was being taught phrasing and musicality and stuff like that, I'm like, but wait a second. This isn't in time. Like, this isn't, the paper says 102, so I'm playing 102.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, wait a second, you're playing solo, so why does it matter? And that's more of like a reference point. So I really wish I had more of both worlds. I wish I had more of your world in my upbringing.
Yeah.
Because I think the two could have blended very nicely. As opposed to having a very heavy marching background, heavy approach in that. So but as far as, like, you went to an academy, I went to a public school.
Yeah.
So the academy life.
Very different worlds.
Yeah, I'm sure. So for middle school, did you go to public school and then went to the academy? Or do they have, like, middle school within the academy?
There is a middle school academy, but I didn't go to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you got to the academy and you're like, okay, I'm here to play drums, what was there? How'd you start?
There's an audition process.
Oh, okay.
So I had to audition to get in. But I actually auditioned on percussion, and then I took jazz as an elective, and then fell in love with jazz while I was there. And then now I just love both sides.
Right.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Because you play with the Henderson Symphony as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Go
ahead.
Do you play classical with that, or do you just play the drum set stuff?
No, we usually don't get drum set stuff, but
okay.
Yeah, I'm a classical musician. I actually tried to be more a part of the classical department at UNLV, but we had a lack of drummers in the jazz department. I was in I was in LeBounty's band, and then I did a musical through Tim Jones. I did Peter Pan, yep. But then I had to stop, and I was in orchestra too. Because Dave Loeb needed me. I was in like 8 ensembles at one point, and I had to tell the percussion department, hey, you know, this is my degree and I have to go help out over there. And
yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
But I tried to keep up with my classical chops by teaching marching band,
okay,
like my mallet chops over there. And then I kept up with my classical chops at HSO.
Okay. Yeah.
So
is it more of like a... like, now, what do you, like, see your career being? Do you see you taking those orchestral gigs forever, or do you plan on trying to be solely drum set? Like, what's kind of, like, the idea there?
Well, I am the type of person that just loves all different styles of music. Like, I love playing with an orchestra. I love playing in a jazz quartet. I love playing in rock bands. I don't know. I keep up with everything so that I can play anything that I want.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
That's the versatility thing is something that I kind of preach.
Yeah. You have to. If you want to work, you have to play all styles of music. I mean,
right.
You want to, the more you know, the more opportunities you get.
Exactly. And that's kind of why I went the performance route with my master's, is because I wanted to make it my own, to where I wanted to, like, kind of refine all these skills. So that way, if I got the call for a timpani gig or a drum set gig, I could say yes.
Right. Yeah.
So, and that's not very common in the classical world.
No,
because
it's not.
A lot of people don't really pay attention to drum set as much as they should.
Yes.
I wish that were not the case, because I feel like everything that you learn on all the other instruments can be, I feel like they can be utilized on the drum set just as much. So at least that's my experience. I also started on drum set before anything. So my approach is a little bit differently. Did you start on drum set as a kid?
Yeah, I started on drum set as a kid. And then I started taking lessons with a UNLV guy who was in the percussion department. And then he started teaching me percussion, and that's how I got in it. Otherwise, I probably would have just stuck to drum set.
Okay, yeah. So what age did you start playing?
Maybe like 7 or 8.
Okay. Yeah, it's around the same time as me. Mm-hmm. We are very alike. Okay,
cool. We're extremely... I didn't know how alike we were.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I started when I was 6.
Okay.
So, but I was all self-taught for most of that time. So while I was playing in church and stuff like that, I still was only self-taught. So there was a lot of stuff that didn't get fixed until later on. But
that's cool because it shows you had an ear for it.
Well, somehow, like I remember the first 2 weeks. For some reason, I remember the first 2 weeks more than anything. I watched some old home videos recently, and I mean, it's bad, obviously, but like I'm holding the sticks relatively correctly. You know, it's not the best or anything like that. And I'm playing like straight beats and everything, and hi-hats too loud, and you know, all the stuff that had to get fixed later on. But I remember the first 2 weeks of me trying to play just with the hi-hat. I could do the kick and snare. I could do boom, ga, boo, ga, boo, ga, but I couldn't do the hi-hat with it. And so I remember the first 2 weeks of just like working on that religiously. And I'm like 6 years old, and I found it. I don't know that it's all my dad's fault. I mean, he's the one that bought me the drum set. So ever since then, it's always been a part of my life, and I'm sure you can relate. It's probably the same for you.
Yeah, exactly the same. I used to put on Disney Channel and try to play along to like Camp Rock and Hannah Montana and learn those, you know, basic drum grooves like.
My influence was like classic rock bands like Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm.
Van Halen, AC/DC was a big one. Back in Black, of course, is everybody's first song to learn. But,
of course.
it was all those like classic rock bands, and I feel like that's a good place to start because of all the because the beats are easily grasped, and you can work on them from there. You know.
Yeah, I start all my students out on classic rock too, because classic rock is just as important as any other part of music history.
I mean, you and I both know that some of those Fremont bands that play, they make a living off classic rock covers. So
there you go.
I mean, my favorite is Spandex Nation. So there's that. I got one too.
The Red Knot Chili Peppers.
The Red Knot Chili Peppers playing all your 90s alternative rock, funk rock. Fremont's crazy, but anyway, have you ever played on Fremont?
I actually have not. I was supposed to with this all-girl group, but that ended up falling through for some reason. See, that's what's cool about being a girl. You'll get called for like an all-group thing or all-girl group thing or an all-girl, you know, organization. We need a girl trio or something like that.
Yeah, we really don't get calls for all guy groups. So it's just like
they already exist.
Yeah, that's super cool though. I mean, how was it playing on the strip though? I mean, obviously it's a different animal, and I mean, kind of like it. I don't think it's like anywhere else in the world, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe Atlantic City, but I mean, even Vegas is the main of its kind. So. You sub for Zombie Burlesque, right?
Yeah, Planet Hollywood.
Planet Hollywood for our good friend Ryan Harrison, who I hope to get on this show at some point.
Oh yeah, he's amazing. We should get him on here.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a workhorse. The definition of a workhorse.
Yeah.
So you play for them. Was that your first gig on the strip?
Yes, that's my first gig on the strip. And honestly, it's just like playing in musical theater. Only you're playing to a click track. And it's the same in a musical theater it's the same show every night. I would relate it to that.
Okay.
So you learn the book, but what were you going to say?
Well, I was saying that, like, the musical theater gigs that I've played, it's like once those first few rehearsals are rough because the kind of like the cuts and everything like that have to be established, the flow of the show. Every show is going to be the same. So yeah, the rendition of that show. So mm-hmm. is it virtually the same like that too?
Yeah, it's very much the same. Except in that show, I'm the only one playing to a click track.
Oh.
So sometimes, like, if someone counts it off wrong, like if we have a new sub, like sometimes another member will count it off and I have to start the click on my side when they count it off. Does that make sense? So yes. Sometimes it's weird, or if the band rushes, which they typically don't, but when they do, I have to really lay it down and tell them, no, this is where it's at.
Or that is really tough too.
It's weird because all of a sudden it'll just split and you I just do a big fill and just bring everyone back in. Getting clicks sent to you was scary at first because for a couple of the shows I wasn't getting the clicks sent to me and the backing tracks would get off. And at that point, I just ripped out my in-ears and just played along with what was going through the speakers. What do you do at that point? Nothing. Rip it out.
There's so much that could go wrong with those shows.
Oh.
That's what I've seen, at least.
Yes.
Like, watching Harrison play Elvis, it's like, I don't know if they have clicks for that show or not. But
they do.
I mean... But he also said that, like, it could be different with different people. I was very close to getting an opportunity to sub for a show that got closed. It was Vegas Gone Country.
Oh, okay.
And I got real close, but the person that was gonna, you know, put me on as a sub was like, by the way, the show rotates every night. And there's different performers, so there's different, like, mini subsets for each performer that you would have to learn. And I'm like, oh, that's not intimidating at all, you know? So, I mean, that's terrifying. And, but at the same time, like, if you get to the point where you're, like you said, you're 10 shows in, right?
Yeah.
So, at this point, are you pretty comfortable?
Oh, yeah. I can... That book, I know it like the back of my hand. But what was weird about when I started to learn the book was Ryan told me, you have to play all of the same licks I do. So go and write out all the licks I do on this recording. And because dancers, they don't understand music in the same way we do. So a certain fill would let them know, like, we're moving on, or this, you know, you're going to change your choreography here. So there's not a lot of musical freedom, like in jazz, which was really hard for me because I'm a jazz girl.
You're right, yeah.
So I had to get used to playing the same fill exactly every night, a couple nights in a row, or a couple shows in a row in one night. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that...
Which is extremely different from jazz. It's clicking with me now. So.
Yeah, jazz is all about expression and trying different things and play this hip little lick that might be a hemiola. Like, no, in musical theater, you are the horse that's running the band, and you have to make sure everybody else is on board because there are lighting cues, there's choreography, all of that. And, you know, lighting guys don't know much about music. They know, oh, I heard that fill. Now I'm going to go boop.
Press button. Yes.
Yeah. So... That was strange. And also reading the chart was interesting too, because I mean, you've seen charts. I mean, they're good charts, but it wasn't all written in there. A lot of the times I had to change the chart. If I had showed up on the gig, I wouldn't have gotten through it. I had to jump through hoops to make sure that the show was down before I got there.
I would do everything I could possibly do to make sure that I'm prepared.
Yeah.
I couldn't just walk up. I'm sure there's some people that could that are like, oh, I'll just figure it out on the gig. To me, that's too high level of a gig to do that.
You can't.
That's just for me. Yeah.
I didn't get a rehearsal with the band. I don't think I've ever played a show with the same musicians every night.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of like different rotations and stuff like that.
Yeah, some people I've never met before. You know, I just showed up and knew the book and then I played. That's also different in jazz too, because you'll get charts and you sight read the charts and everyone's on the same page, but there are mistakes that happen and, you know, we all kind of get through it. You can't do that on this type of gig. And in the same breath, like if you go play a gig at a restaurant and you just call a tune and you just make it up as you go. There's so many different facets to music that you have to know. And as a drummer,
they have to be comfortable in.
You have to be comfortable with reading, improvising. You have to be comfortable with
knowledge of charts. And I mean, if you're playing the jazz cover or you're playing the jazz gig,
mm-hmm.
like if you're going to play at like Osaka or something like that, and
yeah.
they're like, hey, we need a sub tonight, and you got to know the tunes. I mean, out of the, whether it be the real book or I mean standards in general. So
yeah.
That's one thing that y'all have to. Well, myself, I'm trying to get more knowledge of the standards, and everything like that. Because if I do get a call like that, I'm like, I should probably know those tunes. You know.
Well,
what I'm
just call me. I'll give you a list of things that you.
Oh yeah.
of
Amy
tunes.
To the rescue.
Yeah.
But you have to be comfortable in so many different areas to even. I mean, I think about the circ people a lot. Like
yeah.
The circ people have to. I mean, those are high level players. Do you know Alex Stopa?
Yeah, I studied with him when I was in high school.
Okay, yeah, cool. So, I mean, like, he's such a high level player in multiple areas. So, that's just,
mm-hmm.
And I feel like that bleeds over well into the Cirque du Soleil, that high level production. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Another thing that's weird that I'm working on. Is I've gotten calls where the musicians don't read music, so I can't base everything off of charts. Like, I'll make charts for myself, but that doesn't mean they're following what I'm following. And that was strange for me, because even in jazz, I can follow a form in my head. But with like a pop tune, I had to know, okay, this is kind of what the verse sounds like. This is what the chorus sounds like. And I'm just going to follow the singer.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like more on the Fremont Street type thing where
yeah.
they don't read music. They do it by ear and everything is memorized. And that's scary to me.
I've played casino gigs, like cover gigs where like they call me like 15 minutes before showtime and I drive up there and they're like, all right, we're playing 50s and 60s rock.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. And then I was playing with this one band one time. That was the same. They were like, we're playing 50s and 60s rock. And I was like, all right, I'll figure it out. And then they were like, all right, we're going to play Happy by Pharrell.
Right.
And I was like, wait a second.
What?
All right. And then I had people in the crowd that were just so happened to be there. We were playing that Offspring song. What is it? It was an Offspring song,
mm-hmm.
and I had people in the crowd, and they were musicians, and they were like, hey, just so you know, you didn't play the right groove in the verse.
Oh, whatever.
I was like, all right, well, here's the thing. It was a 50s and 60s rock gig, all right, and
yeah.
now we're playing an Offspring song. So
mm-hmm.
we're and then we started playing Purple Rain, and I'm like, where the heck am I? So, and yeah, that... Cover gigs, man.
You know, being a drummer is so weird.
It is.
Like,
I say that all the time.
Like, you know, you're a percussion, even just being a percussionist is weird. Like, have you ever had a crash cymbal in the middle of an orchestra? Like, you've had 60 bars and then just crash cymbal. And if you mess that up, like, there's nothing you could do. That's so unforgiving.
We're soloists all the time.
Yeah.
Nobody, you can sit in the clarinet section and hide.
Oh. I say that too.
Hide.
We cannot hide.
I played a lot of snare drum for Tom Leslie and UNLV's Winter Orchestra, a lot of snare drum. And by far is some of the most nerve-wracking rehearsals and performances I've ever had playing orchestral percussion. Yeah, of course. And that group sounds so good that my ear got developed to the point of like, man, like I really need to blend in here with the upper woodwinds on snare drum. It got to that point, like, where, you know, it's always been like my undergrad teacher was big on that. He's like, we're always playing a solo instrument, whether it's lined up with a part or not. Nobody else is playing a xylophone with the clarinet or flute run. It's just you. So that's one thing if you want to scare some students, tell them that by the way, no matter what anybody else plays in this ensemble, they're going to hear your instrument, like the glockenspiel or crash cymbals or xylophone or snare drum or all of it.
It's woodblock. So scary.
It is.
Like,
and if you just find that comfort zone, it takes years, I think. It did for me. But
Me too. I'm still not fully comfortable, but I've developed certain techniques that will help me through it.
Right.
You know, you have to adapt.
Using our ears as percussionists is, I think just, it's even more important than maybe, you know, intonation between two wind players or something like that. Just because of, we have to line up with somebody across the room or we have to line up with an entire section. I don't know. It's a different animal. I mean, jazz drumming to me, I'm not nearly as comfortable in jazz drum set playing than I am with other stuff, mostly because of I can't really explain it. I talked to James a little bit about this in our episode, but I think it's the mindset that you bring. Like for you, you're going to be more comfortable in that aspect because you've played with trios, you've played with quartets, you've played with big band.
Yeah.
So you understand, it's like with anything, with experience comes comfortability.
Yeah.
And so if you can hear a setup coming, you're able to automatically trigger whatever is in your brain to produce that setup. For me, it takes a little bit more processing power just because I don't have as much experience in the jazz setting. I've been working on it. I've been listening to more jazz and stuff, but it's kind of flip flopped with us because like in the orchestral setting, like I can hear it from a mile away, like, or I can hear very in great detail what I'm supposed to line up with. You know, I do some score study sometimes, like I'll borrow Tom's score or I'll borrow one of the GA score and see who I'm supposed to line up with. In jazz, you can't really do that. It's a lot of communication through the notes, you know.
Jazz is like an unwritten thing.
Exactly.
Like Adam Schroeder at UNLV says that you learn jazz by just listening to it. It's passed down like folklore stories. You have to be in it to understand it. And I think like that's why I was so turned on by it, because it's almost like a secret club.
It really is, though. It really is, because you get people in the crowd that have no musical experience at all. They're just listeners, right?
Yeah.
And they're so enamored by jazz, mostly because of the communication that's occurring on stage.
Oh yeah.
And the advanced material. I mean, the musicianship required to play in a successful jazz group is just different. Like it's another level. So that's why you get so many people that are just in the crowd, like jaws dropped. Like when I saw Nick Mancini play at the Dispensary,
he's amazing.
My jaw was on the floor and I'm sitting next to James, who's a very successful jazz vibraphonist, and his jaw's on the floor.
Yeah.
So it's just a different animal, and something that I hope that I can be more immersed in here coming up, like in the near future, because I'm just, every time I see it, I'm like, I just want to play it. You know what I'm saying? It, as a musician, you're like, man, I just,
you feel inspired by it. Makes you want to go up there.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's, jazz is beautiful in the aspect that you get rid of the music and it's just you and the musicians in the room, but there's still a form going on. And the whole purpose is to complement each other, listen to each other. It's like a conversation, but also pour out your heart. Like, it's human expression. Like, when you play with an orchestra, you could definitely pour out your heart, but you're not making up your own notes. It's like spontaneous composition.
Yes.
And
that's a great way to put it.
You feed off of each other based off of like what that person has to say. And when you get to know, like, I have my own jazz quartet, Rudiments, and my violinist, Peter, I can tell how he's feeling like that day just by how he's playing, like what kind of solo he takes. If he's super pumped up, I could tell with my eyes closed. And that's the kind of connection you can form in jazz.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think your mindset has to be in the right place for it, because mm-hmm. there's some people who play music to impress others, and that's really not what it's about.
I hate that.
It's more about the expression and being comfortable enough on your instrument to be able to, for lack of a better word, speak on it.
Yeah.
And just communicate through it. I mean, if you're able to communicate through rhythm and through a kick snare hat or ride snare kick
mm-hmm.
and hi hat to a person who has no idea what you're doing, then you've done the job correctly. But if you're doing it just to like lay down fast chops and do it for the wrong reasons, I don't think those people ever really truly make it that far.
No.
I think you can kind of tell their intentions in their playing.
'Cause you could say so much in so little. The right. thing that I've learned about playing drum set is I can push a band by not playing the normal fast drummer licks. Mm-hmm. I can do it by getting a cool sound on the snare drum or finding beautiful sounds that the instrument or that the drum set has. You know, I can flip my drumstick upside down and hit the cymbal a certain way and everyone goes, ah!
Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't have to do like some crazy gospel chop fill, and those are cool. Like, you need that. You definitely need that in your wheelhouse. But I think all drummers should play drum set, because it gives you that finesse and that creativity and sensitivity. Because drums, yeah. they're very masculine, and they're very much in your face, but you can't be like that all the time. You have to have that sensitivity and beauty with your instrument. Because, you know, as people, you could connect it. Like, we're not always, like, playing loud and fast and energetic. We have different facets to our spirit. And jazz opens that up for us and teaches us that.
Right. And I think that's why I like brush playing so much.
Oh, yeah.
Because it takes sensitivity to a whole new level as far as, like, drumming goes. Mm-hmm. Like, you're making these sounds with these set of wire prongs and a drum. Like, that's all you need. Mm-hmm. And I've even seen on this recent, like, this masterclass online of JoJo Mayer just playing on a shoebox.
Right.
And playing brushes on a shoebox, and you're like, that's beautiful. That is drumming. That mm-hmm. that is to by definition, and I think that's why I get so, I guess, like, just sucked into brush playing, is because of it's just this whole other world of sensitivity on the instrument, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and JoJo Mayer can rip it on a drum set.
Exactly, he plays like I mean, I think he said his goal in one of the clinics I went to was his goal was to sound like a machine.
Yeah.
And because he was into electronic drumming and stuff like that, and the aspect of electronic drumming. And but at the same time, he has like this beautiful musicianship to what he does and has the ability to be sensitive when he needs to be.
Yeah, that's important. And that's why I'm a huge advocate for education and jazz education, because we could talk about it as adults, but kids need to know that too.
Like, because you're part of a program, right? The Jazz Outreach Initiative.
Yeah. So yeah.
Could you just, I want you to just like unload on what the Jazz Outreach Initiative does, because I think it's really great, and just explode on what they do.
Okay. So the Jazz Outreach Initiative is run and founded by Kenny Rampton, who is a trumpet player in Wynton Marsalis's Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. And first of all, Wynton Marsalis is a huge advocate for jazz education as well. So Kenny and all those guys that are in that band all kind of have their own organizations in their own cities that they're from. So Kenny's from Las Vegas. He was born and raised here. He went to UNLV. And he found that our community needed a greater exposure to jazz studies and awareness. But he primarily focuses on students in grades K through 12, as well as like college. And what he does is he puts on festivals, clinics. He does the Jazz for Young People concerts, where he sends out the jazz outreach sextet. So he brings the music to the kids, and they do master classes, and they usually have a theme. Like, they'll talk about Wayne Shorter for the semester, or Miles Davis. And these kids get so excited, you know, in elementary school talking about Miles Davis. But what else do we do? We have the Las Vegas Youth Orchestra, or Jazz Orchestra, which we just started. It's a partnership with the Las Vegas Youth Orchestra. And it brings the kids together to play in a big band, which we don't really have any outside groups like that for jazz. I mean, we have like marching groups and other things.
Right.
But
there's really no like independent youth jazz like organization except for that.
There's NSA, and they both kind of popped up at the same time, because before this, there was none of that. These kids were getting their jazz education through their band directors, and sometimes band directors aren't jazz musicians.
Right, they just try to get by with what they know.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What else do we do? Since the quarantine, we've been trying to get people involved online. And we do a Monday musical challenge, where we pose a challenge to our friends on social media. Like, our first one was the blues, and we've all been sitting at home, and like everything's scary right now. So everyone just post a video of you playing a blues. And so it took off from there. Now we've gone into different themes. Like, this week is play a Rat Pack tune, and that's been fun because people comment on each other's videos, and it's been a really nice community online.
Oh, good.
We do a weekly Spotify playlist where I pick a different theme and I make a playlist. Like, this week was bebop. We've done women in jazz. We've done one about just staying positive. It's called On the Sunny Side, like the jazz standard.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Our Las Vegas Jazz Youth Orchestra has been posting collaborative videos with kids. So everyone records their part at home, and Gary Cordell puts that together. And then Kurt Miller helps with the sound and the video, and then he posts it for everyone to see, because the kids need something to do at home. So they've been trying to keep them active and keeping their chops up. Master classes, clinics with some of the best, like guys in the...
Didn't you have Jeff Hamilton recently?
Oh, that was NSA.
Okay, gotcha.
Nevada School of the Arts. But we've had people like that We've had Charlie Davis. He played with Frank Sinatra. We've had a lot of different types of people. And we've been taking those master classes that we normally do and putting them online.
Oh, wow.
For everyone to see.
Like, very accessible.
Yeah. And this is nice for our listeners that are, you know, drummers. We just released a newsletter with the drummer Sherry Miracle. And she is a huge advocate for women in jazz. And she's an incredible drummer. She has her own all-female big band. Things like that. But we just did a interview with her on our newsletter. And you could find that on jazzoutreachinitiative.org/subscribe. Or you could find it on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. So
I'll also link it in the description of the podcast. So yeah. People can just, whatever they're listening to on, just scroll down. You can click on that for sure. I'm going to make sure that gets out.
Yeah, I know I'm just kind of dumping all of this on your listeners.
No, it's all good.
But I get so excited about it because this needs to be shared. I kind of have the same passion that you have for this podcast. Like, there's all this information that people need to know and get excited about.
And also, when you get a lot from something and you can see the potential of what people can learn from it, mm-hmm. You get passionate about it. So it's almost like you want to make sure people know about this because they themselves will benefit greatly. And I feel like that's what, from what we've talked about it and what I've seen on social media and around town and stuff is, it's, you know, there's really no reason why it shouldn't be more known than it is. And that I hope this can help y'all out and try to get it out there even more, you know?
Yeah. And like, our organization could definitely benefit from your type of podcast that you're doing now, because jazz drummers, you know, they need to play classical music. They need to hear about James Whiting, who also does musical theater. It's not, you know, you shouldn't just be into jazz. You should be into everything.
Right. And that's one reason why I admire a lot of the people I've met in Vegas is because their willingness to be versatile and to learn and to get better always. Like, they're mm-hmm. so dedicated to their craft. So if that is trickled down through an organization like the one that you're a part of, mm-hmm. then we'll have a whole new generation of people that are going to be like that as well.
Oh, yeah. That's so important. And that's where education and broadcasting is essential, because we need to get that out there. We can play for each other and we can play for our small audience of people, but we need to let everybody know, and everybody's accepted and everybody can scat and, you know, get into the arts. It's, you know, it's beautiful. Kids need it. anybody needs the arts. It's a part of human expression, and it's fun witnessing people that have devoted that or devoted their life to that.
Who are some of the people that have inspired you the most throughout your career? Like, it could be somebody you don't know, could be somebody you do know. Like, who are those kind of people for you?
Let me think. I think Alex Stopa is a huge one, because he was so versatile. He could play in an orchestra. He could play in a jazz club. He plays in the Las Vegas Phil. He plays in rock bands.
He
was a great teacher for me. My high school directors in band and jazz, they did so much for me. And I saw their passion for education. They sent me on so many gigs and so many opportunities to get better. What is that? Mr. Brian Downey and Patrick Bowen. They were huge for me. Let me see. Who else? In terms of maybe people that I don't know. let me think. Sheila E. was cool because she was like one of the first female drummers to really make it. And, you know,
right.
She played with Prince. She had her own, you know.
Lays it down.
Top charts. Who else? Jeff Hamilton was huge for me because he showed me a sensitive side to drumming with his brushes.
Yeah.
And that showed like the beauty in just getting sounds out of the instrument.
For me, it was as far as like drumming influences, like the top three ever, in my opinion, for just overall drum set playing was Gad, Vinny, and Dave Weckl. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I've watched the same YouTube video of all three of them playing at a Buddy Rich Memorial like 5 million times. It's like, as far as like that goes for drum set playing, like, I just. And there's people like Mike Clark and, you know, obviously Buddy and obviously Gene Krupa, but like Stanton Moore or.
Right.
And then people that I have been fortunate enough to meet, like Alex Stopa or my teachers or, you know, Brian Mason and all these people that. It's pretty unreal. Like, that's one thing that I can kind of tie into the niche community thing is, like, we're able to meet these people and have conversations with them or even learn from them. Like, when Greg Bissonette came in my first year, 2 years ago, I established a relationship with him, and I got to take lessons from him.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Greg is, you know, he's a great guy, and he's played with, you know, some of the biggest artists in the world, like Ringo Starr. Or David Lee Roth, you know, Maynard Ferguson.
But he also is a kick-ass drum jazz drummer.
Exactly.
He could do anything.
Exactly. And I feel like our friend Larry Averman is like that, too.
Oh, yeah. And Pepe Jimenez that teach at UNLV.
Pepe Jimenez at teaching at UNLV, yeah. And I want Larry on here so bad. I want to get to know Pepe, too. I think it's just really cool that, like, because of our community and how they kind of all blend together. I mean, we have a convention every year, PASIC. We have NAMM that we can all, like, meet different people from. But that's one thing, too. I mean, the marching community is even more niche and, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody if you get to that point and everything. But there's so much, like, knowledge to share, you know, between all these different kind of people, whether they're a master or a student. So that's one thing that I've kind of noticed recently, especially being in a city like Vegas, because while Houston's a big city, I mean, it's not the biggest live music city either. There's a big hip-hop scene here. There's a big like you know, Dirty South like hip-hop rap scene, and cool. That's one reason why I love hip-hop. But when I got to Vegas, there was just so many live performers and live bands and productions, big shows like that. You know, I've gotten to play in some really great stuff, you know, Legally Blonde production, musical theater, and then I would play, you know, in our steel band and play classical stuff, orchestral stuff, and, you know, just be a part of all these great people that that Vegas can provide. You know, like, there's just such a cool community out there. You're from Vegas, so like, Did you ever realize that younger, like when you were younger, or did you kind of come to appreciate it more as you got older and gigging more?
I think I've always had appreciation for it because I took lessons from people that were gigging. And I heard stories from them, like where they grew up, they didn't have these opportunities. And like, look what I get to do. I got to play on the Latin Grammys last week on TV, like right down the street.
Yeah.
I mean, so I just got so fascinated by hearing all those stories. And sometimes I don't understand why people want to leave Las Vegas. I mean, you know, even though all these gigs are cool, like the underdogs may not always get those opportunities. But I think if you work hard and you network, you could make it all the way up to a Cirque show if you want.
Right.
Like, you could call the guy that works at Cirque and he'll help you out. I don't. Yeah. It's so accessible.
I think it's the way you go about it. Because there can be, like, people that are a little overbearing. They're like, man, I need a gig. Can you help me out? And it's like, yeah, I can help you out. But, like, you know, I think it's everybody's, like, intention behind it. We talked about intention before through playing. But the business side of what we do is just as important as, you know, our craft of actual playing. And, like, I think people need to practice networking just as much as they need to practice their instrument. Obviously, I think playing is always the utmost priority because sometimes playing can do the talking. But have you ever heard of the triangle of a good gig where it's like if you have 2 out of 3 points of the triangle, so like 1 point is it's a good hang, another point is it's good money, and another point is it's good music.
Okay.
So if you have 2 out of 3 of those points, then it's dubbed as a good gig, okay, right? So, like, if I am a good player and I'm getting paid well or I'm paying the other musicians well, then it's a good gig, but I'm also not a very nice person, there's people that are still willing to work through that. But if you – a lot of times, though, the good hang thing outweighs both of them or all three of them. So it's like – man, I can't, I've played in groups before where I'm just like, I can't wait till this gig is over because I can't stand this person or something like that.
Even though the other person is just like absolutely amazing.
Exactly. 100%. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, ah, man, at least I'm getting paid and it's good music. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like that triangle thing.
It's so important. I try to balance all three. It's definitely difficult, but
yeah,
you know, networking is huge though. I will say that, but I view networking as making friends.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Like we've never really talked that much, only in passing. Cause we're always so busy. It's like, hey, how you doing?
Running around the halls rampantly.
Yeah.
I'm moving a timpani drum right now. Cool. See you later.
Yeah. Yep. That was a good 30-second conversation.
But this is cool. Like, this is a cool friendship because we learned a lot of things about each other. And I know you work hard and you're a great musician. And I think it's cool to go and meet people like that. So it's not like, hey, can you get me a gig? It's like, who are you? Like, do you want to come hang?
Go grab coffee. Yeah, something like that, you know. That's a good way to put it. I think more people should view it that way. And not everybody's intentions are going to be like that. Obviously there are always people that are going to be the other way, but I think ultimately everybody finds their place in the music community, whether that be playing, performing, or, you know, or the industry or education.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all three are important, and or they're recording or something like that. So, and all those areas and facets are just as important. So, what kind of stuff at this point in your playing? This is more for the drummers that are listening. What kind of stuff are you working on playing wise? Like practice. How long are you practicing? What's the kind of stuff you want to work on? Like explain some of that.
Currently, right now, I was taking a break from drumming because when the quarantine hit, I was like, oh, I'm going to just practice everything I need to practice. And then I got burnt out. But now I'm starting to get back into it and I'm focusing on mallets. I've been playing marimba solos. I've been working on my vibraphone technique. I've been trying to work on my jazz language because even though I'm a jazz drummer, there's a whole nother side of just vibraphone that I totally need to work on. Like, bebop scales, blues scales, playing over a 2-5-1. I never worked on that. And I want to get in the soloist's head. So I've been working on that. But I, you know, I have the technique. I can play vibraphone. It's just I don't have that side of me. In terms of drum set, I've been transcribing.
Oh, okay.
I just transcribed some Snarky Puppy, if you know.
Oh, which chart?
What About Me?
Yep.
Larnell Lewis is on that. That was funny because I actually transcribed it for a lesson with Pepe Jimenez.
Yeah.
people don't know who Pepe is, he toured with Santana, and he's a amazing drummer on the Strip.
He's a brilliant player.
Yeah. So I take lessons with him, and he's like, okay, just transcribe, like, I don't know, a minute of it. And then I bring it back, and of course, the song's incredible. And he's like, do the whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, I was going to do the whole thing anyways. And then it turns out that it was like a 7-minute song, and
of course. That's like 8 pages of chart. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. And
a lot of the times their forms, I mean, a lot of it's jam, like live recording stuff, right? I mean, mm-hmm. like they have a form, but that solo stuff, like when they hit the solo sections, it's like, mm-hmm. oh man, this is going to be extensive.
Yeah. But I just wanted to point out that listening is just as important as learning technique. I learned so much in just transcribing that one song, and I have a summer's worth of things I need to work on just off of that transcription.
Yeah. And like one of my favorite charts by them is Thing of Gold.
Oh, yeah.
Off the Ground Up album. And
it's great.
I don't know if it's Larnell playing on that chart or not. It may be Spud. But I can see what you're saying. But like if somebody was like, all right, I'm going to transcribe all the drum parts of Family Dinner. Mm. And you're like volume one and you're or volume two and you're like okay, good luck, I'll see you in like 3 years.
Yeah.
Because I would be in Audacity just like slowing everything down, like wait a second, what drum was that? Oh he did a 5 there. Okay, all right, well we'll figure that out.
It's but, so painful.
Yeah, but there's that, I mean, like, I've been working on the transcribing thing, too. Been trying to use my ear more. Mm-hmm. I'm a pan player, so, like,
cool.
Playing lead pan is one of my melodic instruments that I want to be proficient at.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've been working on making lead sheets for, like, if I had a backing track and I wanted to play solo pan, that I could do it. So, mm-hmm. like, I just did You've Got a Friend, the James Taylor version.
Nice.
And I feel like it's going to work really well on lead pan. So I've been kind of like picking charts like that. I've been building my own Apple Music playlist of like if I got called for another cover gig, I need to know these songs kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is new stuff that I sometimes don't get around to listening to because I'm too busy listening to like Kamasi Washington's new album or Nate Smith's solo drum album or, yeah. you know, the Kinfolk album or whatever. So, mm-hmm. That's kind of like what I've been doing. So a little bit similar to like what you've been kind of working on as well, I think.
Yeah. You know what? Lead pan is very difficult. It's in the circle of fourths, right? Like how
right.
it's set
up. If you go right to left around. Yeah.
Whoa.
The spider web layout it's tough. Yeah.
That takes like a whole nother like devotion. I tried yeah, doing that. So good for you. That's wonderful.
And the people who play double seconds and all the other pans are even more monsters. So it's like
the bass pans. There's like 7 of them.
And, yeah, exactly.
And they look like the octopus off of what is that? Little Mermaid when they go to the like Jesus.
Well, that's
where
why.
Do you know?
I mean, that's why, like, I'm so glad I went to school because I never would have learned pan if I didn't go to school for percussion. It was mm-hmm. such a big part of my percussion education that I was like, there's no way I'll never not play this.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You know what?
I played drum set for it, too.
You could take that and you could start a steel pan band for, like, playing pool parties.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There used to be a pan band like that, like, a long time ago here in Las Vegas, but I don't think there's anything like that now. So once the city opens back up, maybe you could think about that.
You're giving me quite the idea there.
Yeah.
Oh, way to
make some
money
with
I
your
see.
Pan.
I guess that leads me to a very important question. How long do you think it'll take for the city to open back up?
Oh, well, first of all, the casinos and restaurants and venues have all shut down their stages and canceled all their calendars, like the events that are happening. I think it's going to take the businesses to feel comfortable again before the entertainment can come in.
Right. Because casino floors are opening, but like Cirque shows are still going to be dark.
Yeah.
I think casinos have been closed since like the last week of March. So right now, today is, what day is it?
Sunday.
Sunday. I don't even know what day it is. Sunday, May 24th. It is May 24th. Thank you, MacBook. They are still not open. I think they said June 4th is when casinos are opening. So it's been a while. They said Cirque shows are still going to be dark. All the entertainment's going to be dark still.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and they canceled all of their shows all the way up until January.
Unreal.
Yeah. But I have heard of some people playing jazz gigs and church gigs. They don't pay very well, but people are like taking them because they're just going stir crazy. They want to play with people. It's going to take for the people. Everyone's shut down at home, so they're not going to want to come to Vegas and party with people all around them, go sharing, you know, a spa with them or standing next to them at a show. People have to be comfortable, you know, to be near.
I still think you're going to have those crazy people that are going to come out as soon as it opens, though.
Yeah, that's scary to me. Because international germs. I don't know. It's scary. I just want to play so bad. This whole thing hurts.
It really does. Yeah.
I feel like the entertainment is going to be last on the list.
I unfortunately agree with you. It's just too much of a, that, you know, being like shoulder to shoulder with somebody, whether you're standing on Fremont Street or you're in a Cirque show, like it's, I think it will be last too. But I mean, there are some people that are taking the optimistic approach where they're like, okay, it's going to open up August. Like, you know, and I'm like, well, that's better than January, obviously. So,
I don't know. I'm going with the flow of it. I'm enjoying doing things like this remotely and putting together videos with friends that live in other cities, doing master classes.
Yeah, the collabs have been really cool. Yeah, the master classes have been cool. All the utilization of like Zoom or FaceTime has been really cool amongst like the music community. So,
yeah, I really appreciate the creativity in this unfortunate event.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, we probably wouldn't have a conversation like this if it wasn't for the quarantine.
That's a good point.
This has been going on for a while though, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it starts out with, you know, asking people that I know well, and then, you know, we, like I mentioned earlier, like we didn't know each other super well before this, so I probably would have got around to it. It's just, you know, it at that point it was so like, I mean, like, how is it, you know, do they really want to go on a podcast with somebody they don't really know, you know, kind of stuff like that. So, but podcasting is becoming more mainstream now and people are being more comfortable with listening to them, long form conversation, stuff like that. So that's why it's becoming easier to get guests and to get people that want to get their story out there. So,
Cool. Yeah. I love it. I love what you're doing. That's awesome.
Thanks.
And that's why I got involved at the radio station, for that same reason. And I think that's super cool. And keep doing it. You know, people need to listen to things like this. Nobody really talks about this.
Yeah, I mean,
like the life of a drummer.
Yeah. Well, there's people that want to hear it. And what I like to do at the end of each episode is I like to just ask the guests like what they're listening to right now. So like just tell us like what you've been just putting on Spotify and listening to intently.
Okay. I've been kind of going through different genres. Like, I just started getting into J Dilla.
Oh, yeah. That's my, yeah, that's one of my main things I'm always listening to.
Yeah. I didn't get a Donuts. Chance to really, Donuts is a great album.
Yep.
Who else have I been listening to? Probably, like, John Mayer.
Yep.
I've been listening to a lot of John Coltrane.
Beautiful.
I'm trying to expand my genres. Led Zeppelin, I've been trying to get into more of their albums.
Yep.
Nate Smith, the drummer, he has a really good album called Kinfolk.
My favorite track off that one is Retold.
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
Great track. Yep.
What else have I been listening? I'm gonna pull up my Spotify actually. Well, I've been having fun making those playlists for Joy. Like bebop playlists. I have a modern jazz playlist. The women in jazz was fun. I have the Charles Mingus Big Band. Who else is on here? The new Fiona Apple album.
Oh, I haven't listened to that yet.
Some lo-fi, Tompa beats, Aretha Franklin, Herbie Hancock, James Taylor.
Hey.
Brad Maldow. Tank and the Bangas.
I actually played a festival with them once.
You did? Oh my god, I love them.
Yeah. They I was in a reggae band and they're like I think they're New Orleans based.
Yeah, but, they are.
They drove into Lake Charles and we played the same music festival and they were incredible.
That's amazing. What about you? What have you been listening to?
I've been listening to let me pull up mine. I'm an Apple Music guy though. New Roy Woods album. He's an R&B artist. Drake's Dark Lane demo tapes album he just came out with. So a lot of hip hop and R&B. Kamasi Washington. On Letting Go album by Circa Survive. It has been years since I listened to that album and I got back into it. It came out in 2007. I didn't listen to it till 2009 when I was a freshman in high school, and I loved it ever since. Watch the Throne, Jay-Z, Kanye West, Alabama Shakes.
Oh, I love them.
Yep. Tom Misch's album. I think we talked about that album
with
before.
With Yusef Days?
Yes.
Man.
Incredible album.
Yes.
So that's really what I've been getting into. You haven't really taken this time to listen to a ton of different stuff, so I'm really enjoying the music that I've been listening to lately.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, take advantage of it. I've been trying to listen to albums all the way through too, because I never have time for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this was really fun, Amy. Thanks for for coming on.
This was fun. Great conversation. Yeah. We talked about a lot.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
So we'll plug a couple more things again. Amy has a group called Rudiments. It's a trio, right?
Mm-hmm. With violin, guitar, bass, and drums.
Very nice. They'll get back to gigging as soon as they can, as soon as they are able.
Yeah.
She is part of the Joy Jazz Outreach Initiative in Vegas, and I'll link all the stuff in the description for all their newsletters and their website and their social media. I'll link her social media as well. Go follow her. Thanks for coming on, Amy. This is really
I have
fun.
A couple EPs that came out that I just want to plug.
Go ahead.
I have an alternative rock like R&B jazz group called Cora, and we just released our first EP called Earthly Love. And then I just released an album with my friend Daniel Sihi. And that's Songs on the Radio is the name of that album. I did drums and percussion on that. That's more of like a happy singer-songwriter type vibe.
Where can you find these?
Anywhere streaming.
Nice. I got the podcast on Spotify now. So if you're a Spotify listener, thank you. It took me, it only took me 3 years, but I got it on there. I figured out how to do it. We're in business now.
Yay.
We're available on all major platforms now, thanks to Anchor. There should be an ad somewhere in here for Anchor. If you're looking into getting us to starting a podcast, Anchor is the way to do it. Trust me, they have helped me out immensely. So, I just want to thank Amy one more time.
Thank you for having me. This was cool.
Absolutely. So, that's it for this one. We'll see you next time.